Ladies and gentlemen, welcome you all to Drive Through HR. And first of all, happy Friday to all of you. And this is your host, Nisha, and I'm so excited to talk to our wonderful guest for today. First of all, thoughts to all of them who are at the south part of DFW area. I know you are into trouble when it comes to a flooding rain for the past 2 weeks. So hope you all are well and safe. So with that note, let's kick off today's show with our wonderful guest, Tom Kimpel, founder and CEO of La Salle Network. Tom, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Oh, Nisha, glad to be with you. And I echo your sentiments about the devastation in Texas.
I know, right? It's been crazy for the last 2 days. I mean, the rain is it's hard over here. So thank you for
puts
that
every,
note,
puts
Tom.
Every, I think creating a culture is so important, but it really does put everything in perspective when we look at tragedy in the world. And I think that it's probably a nice segue into making your work environment a great place. Because not always is everything in the world easy and smooth. So if you can work in a place that has a great culture, it sure does make life a lot more fun and palatable.
You are absolutely true, Tom, when it comes to an environment that it is. We are living in an uncertain environment, right? Because the change can happen today, tomorrow, and just now. So you should be prepared enough to face that challenge, and you should be prepared to have a ball. Equipped team along with you. So with that note, let's kick off the show. Hey, Tom, we would really appreciate if you can talk a little bit more about you, who you are, and a little bit about your organization as well.
Well, I would much rather have you do it, but I guess I'm the expert on me. So,
absolutely.
I mean, yeah, just from a sense of it's not always easy to talk about your accomplishments, but I run a company that I couldn't be more proud of called La Salle Network, and it's been in business for 17 years. I started the company in 1998, and we've had just super growth. We've grown every year since inception. We've more than doubled every 4 years, and currently we have in excess of 140 employees. We have locations in 2 states, 4 offices. We work with startups to Fortune 100 companies. And we specialize in staffing and recruiting, in people solutions. And we have no product. And as the great advertising genius Leo Burnett once said about his own company, our inventory gets on the elevator every day and goes home. And so creating a culture that keeps our inventory in the office, that keeps our people fresh, that keeps them wanting to be here, there's nothing more important to that. And it's been wonderful for us as we've gotten some great national and local recognition in the Chicago market and nationally through national publications, where Crain's Chicago Business for 2 years in a row has named us one of the best places to work in the city of Chicago, and our leading industry publication, Staffing Industry Analysts, has recognized us for 4 years in a row as one of the top 5 best staffing companies in the country. So We're really excited about it. We think culture is paramount. And the result, quite frankly, is we maybe don't grow as fast as we could. But the positive is we retain our staff and we have consistent, steady growth. And I'll take those every day of the week.
Wonderful. Well, excited to hear all of your stories. And congratulations for all the new achievements that you've got out there when it comes to building a great workplace, right? And you know it. You have seen that. You have built that organization from the very beginning, and you have seen that growth when it comes to creating a better culture and when it comes to scaling that company culture as well. So tell our audience how it's like to work at your organization. What's the culture about? At your organization, how did you kick off?
I think there's a couple things, Nisha, that are really important. And that is, number one, we grow. And so we've been an Inc. 500, 5,000 company for 8 years in a row. And I say that because it's really important that culture without growth isn't a positive thing. And we've seen that through the dot-com bubble of the early 2000s, and we're seeing it a little bit now, is that you can have a great culture and you can have video games and TVs and parties and bars and all these great things that make it feel like a game. like a fun room. However, if you don't have growth and profitability, you're not building something of substance. So the number one thing I say is you've got to get and maintain revenue growth and profitability growth in order to have a great culture. So our culture, while fun and awesome and terrific and acknowledged and people are happy and we have retention, if we didn't grow, I'd blow the thing up and do a completely different culture. And I believe you've got to realize that multiple cultures are successful. There's cultures that are blue suit, white shirt, red tie, a la IBM of the 60s, 70s, 80s, that work. There's offices of predominantly millennials that work. There's offices of middle-aged men or women that work. There's all sorts of different cultures. So I really truly don't believe there's a one-size-fits-all. What I think you need is to realize the culture you want to have as a leader and then identify people who fit into it. And while I think sports analogies are hugely overused, I do believe this is an effective one, and that is if you were a football team or a basketball team or what have you, and you were building your team to be a passing offense in football or a fast break offense in basketball, and then you didn't assemble players that worked in that type of scheme, you're not going to succeed. So if you're going to have a fun-loving, goofy environment that people work 15 hours a day, and then you want to get a lot of analytical people that are married and have four kids and they want to be with their family, it just doesn't gel. It doesn't necessarily gel. So you've got to realize the culture you want to have and then attract people that fit in that culture and then encourage to be a part of it. So then the flip side is you get this great culture, your company's growing, and as a leader, you accomplish some success and you say, you know what, I want to go do other things, but either A, your team expects you to be there and now you're not, or B, you haven't assembled the next generation of leaders to carry on the torch. And you don't have to always be there. It shouldn't be a one-woman or one-man parade, but you need to assemble the next level of leadership to carry the torch.
Well, going back to that point of assembling the next generation of leadership, you know, you talked about identifying people who fit into that culture, right? So currently we are living under, you know, let's say five generation in the workforce, and by 2020 we are expecting to have majority of them are millennials. So in that mode, if you're going on that path, how do you or what do you suggest to our audience when it comes to building leaders within the organization who actually dealt with the culture from different generations?
I think you want both. I think you want internal development. I think you do want sporadic external hires to come in as leaders. I think the key is what people do when they hire external leaders is they aren't explicitly clear on how they want the new people coming in to fit into their culture. And I think they've got to be really, really clear on that, both verbal and written. I think you want a document, a working document with external leaders you bring in that you can go back to and point of what you expected from them from a cultural basis. With developing your own leaders internally, I think there's twofold. I think number one, there's talking to your new generation of leaders about the business at hand, about revenue at hand, about projects that are here today. But then there's also time away from the direct revenue today and talking to them off-site about long-term where you want them to grow and coaching them through situations that arise. And when you're promoting managers for the first time or they're taking on different regions or growth, you need to be clear and talking to them about what their involvement is with their staff, how they're doing it, because a lot of producers move into management and leadership, and they think that now their job is to study reports and look at growth trends and deal with bigger picture items when their real strengths were in the weeds and in the minutia. So you've got to make sure that they don't remove themselves too quickly from the day-to-day responsibilities while also looking at the bigger picture growth. Then on top of that, you want to combine external development. You want to find professional coaches. You want to find development sessions through, you know, it could be anything as I don't want to say basic in a negative light, but is known, well known as a Dale Carnegie, to the American Management Association, to industry trade shops and associations, and combine that and then hold people accountable to what they learned. And really what ends up happening is leadership takes a hands-off strategy to managing their new leaders and just expects them to know what to do. And it's wrong. It's dead wrong. You've got to be as ingrained in your managers as you are ingrained in your clients.
Absolutely. So that makes sense when somebody says culture eats strategy, right?
Oh, I believe that culture is not a decorator in a video game and a bar stool. I believe culture is
true.
A work ethic. Culture is, to me, culture is work ethic and communication.
Mm-hmm.
And driven down from work ethic and communication are client engagement, is staff interaction, it is brand enhancement, it's events and socializing. It's all of those things, but it all derives from work ethic and communication.
Absolutely. So, Tom, for an organization who are in, let's say, growth stage, and they have a pretty unique culture out there, but when it comes to, you know, the company is growing and they are expanding globally. So on that scaling aspect, what would you recommend for them to keep that company culture unique and standard and identical everywhere across the organization?
What a terrific question that is. I think that you need to look at it two ways. Number one is you do want there to be a corporate cultural philosophy,
mm-hmm.
a philosophy, mm-hmm. almost as though it's like a parental, it's an overarching religious theme, but then underneath it are different little sects, if you will, of the religious theme. And I think it can work really, really well. So you want to use the technology that we have. You want to have video meetings. You want to have more than just one-on-ones. You want to have group video meetings between different units in different geographic regions. But then what you've got to want, and this is crucial, you've got to want each geographic region to have its own subculture.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's a foreign language speaking geographic or an English speaking geographic, or even domestically, California versus New York versus Chicago, St. Louis, Jacksonville, Omaha, Madison, what have you, you want to have subcultures of different little traditions that they have. I mean, it could be something so raw and so basic as one office does high fives and another office does fist bumps. And I'm being very rudimentary, but it could be that basic. But it could also be in dress code. It might be in hours worked. It might be in meeting style. There's so many different things it could be. But to
Absolutely.
Embrace that. But now the truth is, now this is where people get off, is that when you're mm-hmm. going to have different leaders, different managers, different division presidents running their groups differently, you've got to say, I will give you the autonomy to do this. However, the results have to follow. And holding on to a different culture when results are not following it can be detrimental to the health of the organization.
Yeah, this reminds me of the talk that I had with the CEO of Great Place to Work Institute, Ronald Thomas. The other day when I was talking to him, he said that he is dealing with people in his company who normally talk about, you know, 18 different languages. So these are people from different communities, different cultures. So somebody who might be wearing a hijab and probably conservative, and some of them might be culturally, you know, liberal. And when it comes to embracing casual way of dressing, so they are pretty much into that. So basically, being an HR professional or being a leader within that organization, it's all about embracing the people that you have.
Well, it's embracing the people, Nisha, but I think there's also something that needs to be learned by that, because if you go into a foreign country and you mm-hmm. hire somebody to run that office, they may be the right person, they may be the wrong person, but you're going to what people want to do is they hire that person, and then they trust their views as the be-all and end-all. So you need to make sure you do your market research, too, because there could be religious – there's extremes on everything.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And if you're
absolutely.
An American
and those
company
– sensitive, too.
Yeah, and you open up an office in India or China, and you don't know anything about either one of those cultures, and the person you hire is on one end – you know, hopefully they're moderates. Right. Hopefully they're moderate mm-hmm. and they embrace people from all ends of the spectrum. But if you hire somebody not knowing the ends of the spectrum because you haven't done your research, now all of a sudden you could be alienating a whole group of people who could be awesome employees for you. So really what you want to do is do some engagement with some an external consulting firm that specializes in that region to give you the data. Because if it's important enough to go into a country to do business, it's important enough to understand the culture and not just trust one person's opinion. Because I'll tell you this, you look at the United States of America and you hire somebody, and you could hire somebody who is anti-establishment. You could hire somebody who is pro-gay marriage. You could, you know, there's so many different political ends of the spectrum and religious ends of the spectrum in the United States. And if you came here not knowing that, and you hired somebody who wasn't a moderate, you could be alienating a whole group of people.
Absolutely. And all it takes is one person, right? That's going to mess up the whole culture of an organization.
Especially
so
in a startup.
Uh-huh. So in that startup, what do you recommend? Now you know that the trouble of having that one person who is not going to be the right fit for the organization. How would you recommend our audience to get rid of that person?
To get rid of them?
Yeah, to get rid of one single person, let's say, who
well,
is
I think
not
it really
into.
It really depends on the country. You know, you go into Brazil, you can't fire people at all. It's extremely difficult. Same thing in France. I mean, mm-hmm. in different countries, there's different laws, and I think that's a great question because we don't all know the answers, and it's similar in, you know, there's different with the states and the United States of how employment laws are regulated, but it's even greater discrepancy when you get into foreign countries. So you need to be working with a law firm, in an employment law firm in every country you're doing business with, to make sure you understand not just the business laws, but the employment laws.
Correct.
So before you hire anybody, right now, what you want to do is you want to have a when you get married.
Mm-hmm.
When you have I can't think of the phrase of the document that you sign, where you each hold on to a prenuptial agreement.
Okay.
And so what you don't want to go in, people always say you don't want to go into a marriage thinking about divorce, but you also want to realize that 50% of all marriages end in divorce. And when you go into business in a country, you don't want to think about firing anybody, but we know what the turnover is of employees.
Correct.
And the odds are that most employees don't stay at one company for forever. And if you're going into a foreign country, you're hiring somebody as an executive level who's leaving an existing company. So you have to look at it and say, we want to be prepared in case you do want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have those documents in place and to have the knowledge of how you're going to separate if in case you do. Because it's hard. It really is tricky. And you don't want to have business that you're 10,000 miles away from and not be ready to make decisions.
Correct. Well, Tom, going back to one of the points that I noted on my notepad, which is, as you said, scaling and the revenue growth. And you're right. It's not just about having fun and probably having a boost table that you have at your office and employees having fun, but at the end of the day, you're not making any revenue. It doesn't make any sense. So, but on the other hand, you know, scaling isn't just about getting bigger, right? It's all about getting better, too. So on that note, what would you recommend for our listeners when it comes to figuring out the aspects that are going wrong within the organization and on a day-by-day basis or probably month-by-month basis, getting the organization better when it comes to dealing with all those sensitive issues in a better fashion
well,
that
I'm
your
gonna
employees
agree,
won't
I'm
go
gonna,
up?
I'm going to agree with you and disagree with you, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
The agreement is when you're growing, success hides a lot of problems. So there is more to growth than that. Scaling is more than just growing. It is improving. However, I've seen a lot of companies fail and slow down because they want to improve something that isn't broken for the sake of improvement.
Oh, yeah.
And they want to be able to post it out there that we've changed this and grown that and done this. But it's about it all. We open up businesses for a variety of reasons. But you want to make money. You want to make money. And and the one thing that happens in business is usually the more you make, the more you want to continue to grow that. And that should be a directive result of the efforts and the development of people that work for your organization and what the company's done. But it's hard because as you grow, you hire people that are good at things you don't know anything about. So as you get to be a large company or a multinational company or an e-commerce company or whatever the issues are, you may now have a risk and compliance department that you never needed before. Well, the majority of entrepreneurs aren't risk and compliance people. They're actually they aren't risk-averse people. So now you've got to hire people and be thinking about what I always say to my clients, think about what could go wrong with any situation. Where could a problem arise? And then you need to find somebody who can focus on that. And what ends up happening with leaders, whether it's in the HR area or with the C-suite, is that they like to do the fun things. They want to focus on client interaction. They want to focus on employee hiring or retention. They want to focus on marketing. But at the end of the day, the things that are fun aren't necessarily where the problems are. And you've got to focus on what could go wrong and making sure you have checks and balances, because the bigger problem may not be when you're not doing well. The bigger problem may be when you're growing, because it hides the problems, and then when the economy slows down or your business slows down, those problems become not just little holes in the wall, they become the Grand Canyon. And if you can fix those, my view has always been you want to tweak your business when things are going well, when you're growing, because it takes time to make those changes, and you'll probably be ready to roll out the changes when the economy is starting to shift. But a constant evaluation, it's consistency, consistent meetings with management team. They don't have to last for hours on end, but they need to be consistent so you're in touch with the business. I think strong operational and financial reporting is crucial, whether it's done internally by salaried personnel or externally by consultants and professional service firms. But you need to have data to make decisions.
All right, talking about consistency and, let's say, sustainability, I guess if we have employees in front of us when it comes to having a culture instigator or, let's say, brand ambassadors in order to take our culture move forward, I would say it can go a long way than we expected, right? So what do you recommend to build a brand ambassadors within the organization?
If it's an added responsibility, I love it. If it's a purely solo job, I hate it.
No, it cannot be a solo job, right?
Well, you know what? There's companies that do. There's companies that make people cultural ambassadors, brand ambassadors, and their job. And you know what people say? They look at them and they go, must be fun to have a job where it's all great to tell people that are doing the heavy lifting that they should be happier and better, right? You want to have people. The core demographic is you want people who've been there less than a year. They need to earn their stripes, right? They need to be in the – they're the enlisted men, and whether – enlisted men and women. And whether they have been there, whether they are an executive or a director or whatever, they cannot be – They should be drinking the Kool-Aid and be brand ambassadors anyways, because they should be so excited to be a part of it. But they don't need the additional responsibility of being told it. They should just be excited because they're there. That's why they joined your company, right?
Yeah.
And then you have the people that have been there, who've been there for, 7, 8, 10, 15 years, Well, those people are there because they love it, and they should understand what it's about, and they don't necessarily need to be doing it either. But those people who've been there 2 or 3 years to 5 years, those are crucial, because people tend to leave jobs between year 3 and year 5.
Correct.
And those are the people you want to keep excited and engaged, and that people from who are higher level respect because they've built stability and they're adding to the company. And the younger people can relate to because they're not that much younger in their career there, because they haven't been there that much longer than them, so they haven't lost sight of the forest through the trees. But yet they've also been there long enough that they respect what they've accomplished. And so I'm a big believer that those 2, 3, 4, 5 year people are the ideal people to spread the word within your four walls of your organization.
Great. Well, Tom, we are down to 4 minutes at this point of time, and I really, really want to ask this question. As you said, when data, you know, how do you recommend when it comes to using data to scale the company culture? I mean, is there any metrics that you would suggest when it comes to measuring the success of your company culture very particularly?
No, I think that when you're looking at data, I believe you look at revenue and activity data, and that mm-hmm. sets your culture. Because if your activity data and your revenue data isn't going in the direction that you want it to go, then whatever culture you have isn't effective. And you could have the best culture in the world and your revenue drops. Guess what? Shift. Might be 2 degrees, might be 80 degrees, but there has to be a shift. So always knowing your financial and operational metrics is really the lifeblood of your culture. And it's very similar to your physical well-being. You could be in the best shape in the world, but if you've got high blood pressure, you're still going to have a heart attack. Does it mean you don't want to be in great shape? No. But it means you may also need some medication to keep your blood pressure under control.
I like the metaphors that you are using on this talk. So, Tom, again, 2 minutes left. So tell us a little bit more about your organization, and where can our audience connect with you and find out more details about you and your organization, and if they would like to continue this conversation
for sure.
Further.
Well, you can always reach me on Twitter at Tom Gimbel, TOMGIMBEL, or at LaSalle Network is our company Twitter, LASALLE Network, NETWORK. Our website is LaSalleNetwork.com. And the key for me is C-level engagement with the employees. And whether you're a Fortune 100 company or you're a startup, is the CEO has to be engaged with more than just their clients and more than just the direct reports. And the CEO has to want to walk the hallways and talk to people. And the bigger the company, you can't know everybody's name, but you sure can make eye contact and a handshake and a touch on the shoulder. You can shoot people a text when they do a good job or an email. And let me tell you, if you're a Fortune 100 CEO and you have got an employee in another country or another state and they do something that saves the company hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars, right, to shoot them a text, to have somebody shoot them a text or an email that comes from you, it's life-changing to somebody earlier in their career, and it makes them feel that they are cared about from the highest levels. And never, ever, ever forget what it was like to be right out of college or a staff-level person or a middle manager, and don't ever forget about the people that make the company grow, because without people, your clients won't get serviced.
Absolutely. Well, treat your people well, folks. So, Tom, again, thank you so much for being here with us today at Drive Through HR, and we really, really appreciate your inspirational conversation that we had right now, and look forward to having you once again on
you
Drive
Through
HR
thank
show.
You, thank you for having me on, because you're the engine that makes the car go, and everyone knows the reputation and the ability of what you do and what your podcast does. And I'm just glad to be a part of it, and I thank all your listeners and you and your team for having me on. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And again, have a wonderful rest of the day. Have a great weekend to all of you and to the people who are at the south part of DFW area and across Texas and Oklahoma. Stay safe. Thanks again. We'll talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.